This is for all the girls who grew up without strong geek role models to help them discover their geek dreams.
For everyone who's ever been quizzed about their video game knowledge because girls don't play games.
Geek Hearing is working to bring female-identifying geeks into their prime to be the role models, dreams, and voices.
About to show these boys how we do it.
Higher, further, faster, baby.
It's not about deserve.
I'm not an owl!
A girl has no name. There is something supernatural at work here.
It's about what you believe.
Did I step on your mom?
The Guardian Leviosa.
Now on, you do as I do.
You may the odds be ever in your favor.
Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this?
Welcome to Geek Herring, a critical geek culture podcast where we talk the good and the bad parts being a chick in a male-dominated environment. Hi, I'm Amanda, and with me today is my awesome, hilarious, wonderful, and over there in getting exceedingly darker Austria co-host, Monica. It's dark. It looks dark where you are. It's dark.
It is dark. That is true.
Yeah.
Oh,
I feel like indeed. The last time I saw you in Squadcast, it was not as dark.
Well, that was because we started at 3 p.m. my time or something. But yes, it's also getting darker. And thank you for reminding me. I didn't notice that that is actually happening because I never see the outside world.
I feel you.
As you do.
I feel you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here today with you and with our amazing, awesome, wonderful, hilarious guest, Justin. Hi, Justin.
Yay. Hello.
Hi, Justin. We're excited to have you on.
I'm excited that the internet and life is working this time.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
Makes a big difference.
Yes.
Makes a really big difference. I know Justin from Facebook, believe it or not, from those random Facebook podcast communities. And Justin had a nerdy podcast. We have a nerdy podcast. And, well, we just became friends. And, boy, am I ever glad.
What do you mean we have a nerdy podcast?
Sorry, we have a geeky podcast. It's a geeky podcast. Sorry.
Isn't that generally the same?
Yeah.
Generally.
Is there a difference?
I wonder. I think there is. I think if you ask.
I mean, I think like I think like geek is definitely more like superheroes and comic books and board games and stuff. And like if you're going to get technical, nerd is more like computers and tech and pocket protectors.
Pocket protectors?
Pocket protectors.
Yeah, you don't want ink stains. No ink stains around here. Oh, well, it's when you're wearing a white dress shirt and you've got a pocket here. You can't see that because my mic's in the way. So we're going to pretend that the pocket is here. And you put your pens in the pocket. However, pen ink on a white shirt, that's a bad time. So you put in like a plastic sheet of pocket protecting and then you can put your pens in there.
That's a bit bonkers, isn't it?
It is a real thing. It's like a stereotypically nerdy thing, like 80s, 90s North American nerds.
Yeah, very much so.
That stereotype is
still a real thing, and it's kind of crazy. But yeah, so the moral of that story is that pens suck and nerds are awesome.
Agreed.
Did you just say pens suck?
Yeah.
They do.
Okay.
I broke my pen
today. Fuck you, pens.
So can confirm that it sucks.
I have a hard time remembering I'm having one in my hand now. I don't know why, but it's there, but I hardly ever use them. That's why my handwriting looks like absolute shite already.
The only solution is just throw in the trash. It's the only answer.
True.
Just see a pen, just break it in half. You're learning.
Just like,
look at that. That is what this world needs. It's just action.
And it's dedication.
Dedication.
And a huge fuck it all attitude.
Yeah. Amen.
Especially this year. It's no better time.
Yes. That is so true.
Yeah. So I am going to tell you a little bit about our friend Justin Williams here. Justin is the host of Super Tangent Podcast, which is a nerdy podcast, all talking all things nerdity and geek culture and pop culture and all the good stuff because nerds are cool. He has recently celebrated 50 episodes of his podcast, which means we're going for over a year now. Woohoo! Congratulations, Justin.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
He is a professional audio editor with his own business. And he is the dad to the cutest little girl who does make the occasional appearance on his Facebook stories and live videos.
Yes.
So how'd I do, Justin? How was my introduction to you?
That was the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. All of that was false. That was perfect. You described me like, if I die tomorrow, I would want you to say that at my funeral. That was perfect.
I will mark that down in your will.
But please don't die tomorrow. Thank you very much. Yeah. No.
Cool. So, do you want to tell us a bit more who you are? What's and then we'll get in the rapid fire, and then we're going to get right into the nitty gritty of the show.
Nit and grit. Yeah. Okay. My name is Justin. I started Super Tangent Podcast in 2017. Me and my best friend, when we were in college, we would always have these really annoyingly sophisticated conversations about like pop culture politics and things like that. And by annoyingly sophisticated, I mean we would dive into the psychology and the sociology of our favorite video games and our favorite films and the culture behind them. So we would really get into these conversations while alienating everyone else around us because we were getting a little too deep. And so those conversations slowly became, you know what? Maybe we can turn this into a podcast. Unfortunately, he's a terrible person and he is super inconsistent. So I was just like, you know what? I'm not going to wait for you. I'm going to do it myself. So if you're listening, you know what I said is true. And so I just started Super Tangent. I took a billion different courses in 2017 from all sorts of, you know, online entrepreneurs and podcasters and things like that. I got really in tune with Twitter and Instagram, seeing what everyone else was doing, and just kind of made it happen. I do a lot of music, and so like digital music. I work with a lot of different digital audio workstations, and so the audio editing aspect of it, transferring that, was very simple. You're just basically going from instruments to just, you know, vocals and things like that. Slowly but surely learned that's a whole world unto itself. But being able to podcast has been really, really good. It's a for someone like me, I'm in Anchorage, Alaska, and I was born and raised here. It gets very dark in the winter. So about 6 to 7 months out of the year, each day we get about 3 to 4 hours of sunlight, which for someone like me is terrible. Now, conversely, during the summer, we have what's called the midnight sun, where we get maybe in a 24-hour period, maybe 19 of those hours are sunlight. So it always looks like it's 2 p.m. And the sun goes down around midnight and the sun starts to go up around 2 a.m., 3 a.m. And it's like a one big party. So there's this odd contrast where it's like nothing but sunlight and then it's like nothing but dark. And it's like, especially during those dark months, it's really easy to get depressed. It's really easy to have cabin fever, and it's a really real thing here. And so podcasting kind of provided like a sort of a spiritual mental outlet for me, a therapy kind of thing. And that's what kept me like doing it. Even when the weeks where I just needed to take a little break, like I was really happy to have this. And especially because my whole life has just been being a nerd. It's really nice now to be able to talk about it openly in the ways that it has formed me as a grown man and as a father and as a husband, as a son, and to look at these sorts of things from all different sorts of perspectives, and to gain perspective as well, to make fun of what I hate, but to also hear about why other people love those things as well. I remember my first episode, the last 10 minutes, I think I just spent ragging on how much I hated the sequel to Independence Day. I just thought it was the worst movie of all time. And then later on, had a few people come to me and explain why they enjoyed it. And, you know, it's like little things like that. And so it just kind of is a testament to the fact that, like, we as geeks or nerds or however you want to call it, like, there's just something about this culture that brings so many different people to the same table in a way that other things don't. And especially in 2020, it's so necessary to be able to communicate with people in a positive way where you can disagree like a grown-up, and argue like a grown-up and walk away still being friends. That's so important. So Super Tangent, I want Super Tangent to continue to be able to contribute to that legacy, and to do something positive. So that's kind of what I guess the podcast and blog is about.
I love that.
I do too. I really like what you said about how it's something that brings so many people from all walks of life to a table of something in common. Because it does. It does feel really like a family, even if your family is really dysfunctional and you all like different things and have strong opinions, and there's still that common ground.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important to acknowledge that.
Definitely.
What resonated with me a lot is that you said that people can talk about it and disagree with things as grown-ups and as adults and acknowledge that they have different opinions, but then you can still be friends about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's something that in the last, I don't know, couple of years or something is getting lost a bit more and more, because this agreeing to disagree seems to get even more difficult in a weird way. And I'm not sure if that's mainly due to, I don't know, Twitter being the way it is and social media being the way it is, but it's just something that you seem to notice as well, that it's not that easy anymore to not just jump onto the cancel culture train and be all like, well, you suck and I won't talk with you ever again anymore because you're an idiot and we don't agree on this, so we can't be friends anymore, basically. Like in kindergarten, when you don't want to invite anyone to your birthday party because you don't like them anymore.
Yeah. I've been seeing this post go around Instagram, and I'm going to make it our own. And it's like, when we say we agree to disagree, it's like we agree to disagree on, you know, who's better, Thor or Loki, not are you a racist bigot, not are you transphobic. It's like we agree to disagree on, like, pop culture. We don't agree to disagree on human rights.
Absolutely. That's super important. Yes. And I love how lately, like, one has really been influencing the other, you know. You're seeing lots of progressive things in pop culture and social media that doesn't necessarily surrender and subscribe to the cancel culture mentality, but it does uplift minorities and educate everyone else on how to do things in a very in a positive way, but also in an organic way. There is such a thing as being disingenuous in your efforts to be representative and positive, or give minorities the spotlight, whether they're women, whether they're Black or Asian or whatever. And America in particular has a really big problem with that. And in 2020, especially with cancel culture, a lot of people online think they're fighting for something and they're not. They're just angry. And they're just looking for things to be angry about. The biggest example of that, I think, and I'll just never forget this because I was just so furious about it, was when Ahmaud Arbery was shot and killed, a black man running through his neighborhood and was shot and killed. And around that same time, what I noticed on Twitter wasn't his name trending. It was Robert Downey Jr.'s, because people had just discovered somehow that he had played a character wearing blackface in Tropic Thunder. And there was this whole, like, it was absolutely ridiculous, but there was this whole short-lived cancel Robert Downey Jr. moment, because there was these people who just realized he just did this movie with blackface 12 years ago, had never seen it, therefore have no context as to why it was okay and why it was actually hilarious and successful, but they were more worried about that than Ahmaud Arbery, which is like, that's the real world. And so it's like, it's really easy to get, like you said, this kind of like on the cancel culture train and feel like you're fighting for something, when in reality, you're just missing the entire point. And I think, a lot of good shows on Netflix and HBO Max, in particular, Lovecraft Country and Watchmen, are just doing a spectacular job of just bringing these things to light, and not in a really dumb way. Like, there's a lot of stuff in the past where it's just like, all good people are, all black people are good, all white people are bad. And it's like, I hate that mentality. I hate that logic. Mm-hmm. And I'm blessed to live in Anchorage, Alaska, which is statistically one of the most racially diverse cities in the entire United States. But it is just such a terrible rhetoric. And so we're in an era, I think, where nerddom and pop culture is doing a really good job, I think, of educating, you know, everyone on every side on how to do this organically and together, instead of individually. There's no you people here, you people there. It's like we're in this together. We're going to get out of it together or not at all. So
do you think this is, I mean, we totally skipped the rapid fire round, but I think it's fine because it's so much more, it's so interesting.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to mess up the structure.
No, not at all. Do you think that pop culture became more and more educational in the last couple of years? Or is that something that was always part of it all? Did it always have this educational, because I do find myself thinking that as well. Like, if you look at a lot of Marvel movies, just the representation in various forms and kinds, for example, and how things are portrayed often is just where you're like, this is what we need now, because people watch that stuff all the time and that hits the masses now, and we need more things like this where people watch it and they're like, oh, is that's how it goes, and LGBTQ people can be everywhere and black people can be everywhere and they're not always the stereotypical dangerous whatever kind of bullshit stereotype that is portrayed so often before. Do you think it's now a bit more like that in pop culture, or was it always a bit the more educational kind?
I think major studios have always been aware of of these sorts of things and have always sort of been in tune. I don't think that it's always been super educational. I think that now it's very, very intentional, because it has to be. They're really don't really have a choice anymore. And you know, it's kind of, I go back and forth about it and about how certain major studios are going about it. You know, progression is such an interesting thing from a sociological point of view. And when we talk about it in pop culture, in DC Comics and Marvel Comics, we see a lot of people who agree with it and a lot of people who don't. One of the biggest examples I think I have of that is like what they did. I don't know if you guys have seen the Iron Fist show on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. I have, yeah.
You did.
No, Monica hasn't.
Monica, I'll tell you something, because it's part of the whole Defenders, whatever. It's the worst of them all. It's, in my opinion, it's like, it's good, but it doesn't quite, you know, but it's a good show. I would personally recommend it. It missed a few marks, yeah, but I do like it, and I've watched it and rewatched it, and it's a good show. But I remember the controversy of them casting Finn Jones from Game of Thrones as Danny Rand, who is Iron Fist, and Iron Fist is a white blonde guy who uses martial arts and a bunch of other super heroic skill sets to fight the bad guys. And you know, me and my older brother, I only have one sibling. We were raised on a lot of 80s comics. And a lot of late 70s comics as well. So we're familiar with kind of more obscure characters like Monica Rambeau, the Black Captain Marvel, and Power Pack, and you know the Defenders, guys like Luke Cage and Iron Fist. And one of the most important things about Iron Fist is the fact that he is white. Like, unlike a lot of other superheroes who just happen to be white, Iron Fist's whiteness is a huge part of his story. It's a huge part of his context. In his story, he is the minority. When he goes to Kunlun and is trained by all these people, it's like he's just like a, you know, kind of a, you know, entitled rich white guy, and American white guy, no less. And when he gets a part of this other culture, he adapts that culture. He doesn't appropriate it, but he is taught in their ways. And then he takes that back home to New York and defends New York with a range of other New York superheroes, because all the Marvel superheroes are in New York. So when when the Iron Fist TV show was announced after Luke Cage, and that was a very great show, by the way, people were mad. because there was a certain controversy about Iron Fist being white, and a lot of white people were like, why can't he be Asian? This would be a great time for Asian representation. And I had to sit back and think about this, and I was just like, this could be a good thing, but at the same time, why do we need the only martial artist here to be Asian? Mm-hmm. Is it mm-hmm. because we think that's what Asian people should be doing? Like, oh, this is what they do, and we want to be entertained by what we perceive as what an Asian needs to be doing? Or do we actually care about getting an Asian in there? Because no one said this about Daredevil. Yeah. No one said this about Jessica Jones. No one said this about anyone else. So, you know, it's things like that where I really have to just step back and say, is this an educational moment? Or is it something as simple as Marvel just trying to be faithful to the source material? So I don't think it's always been educational. And I think it doesn't always need to be, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's perfectly fine that, you know, the six Avengers in the 2012 movie were all white. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong that the version of Iceman that we got in the earlier X-Men films was heterosexual. There's nothing wrong with that. But I do feel like now there really isn't a choice. Now studios really have to step up. Studios really, not everyone, not every show, but a lot of them need to step up the way that HBO Max is stepping up with Lovecraft Country and their Watchmen show, which was phenomenal. And really take this fun medium, this comic booky, superheroic, nerdy medium, and use it as an educational platform so that everyone can come to this class and leave the class learning the same exact thing. In the 90s, it wasn't like that, I don't think, you know? And in the 80s, I don't think it was like that. And again, that was fine. We just live in a time where it's more important than ever to do that, because everyone is zoned in. And now that everyone's homeschooling due to Corona, even little kids are on their screens all day. So there's like, it is just too risky to not just get in tune with what needs to be done now. Before it didn't have to be done, but now it absolutely has to be.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. I think, you know, maybe not in terms of race or sexuality, like pop culture didn't used to like really put any emphasis on that. But I think that there, especially for women's rights, like with the introduction of Wonder Woman and the introduction of Carol Danvers as like really strong characters, I think that there was a start there. Like comic books, pop culture has always been a bit more open, accepting, pushing what should be, rather than like a lot of other industries. And I think pop culture has been more on the forefront of fighting for human rights than many other industries. I'm not saying they're perfect, God no. But I think like compared to just mainstream Hollywood, for example, like there has been a lot more progression in terms of bringing the right people into focus when it needs to be, like in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s with Wonder Woman and Carol Danvers. And I think Black Panther comics came out around the same time. And now like there's increasingly more representation now that our society needs more of that representation. And I'm not saying it shouldn't have been there before, because of course it should have been, but we are getting there.
Yeah,
I think they're also still a result of their own time, because yes, while like Wonder Woman and even Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers basically were so revolutionary back in the days, they still went through that character progression where they then also all of a sudden then made Captain Marvel part of Miss Marvel, or Captain Marvel was a guy first, and then they got like these weird stories where that also Wonder Woman was first the super fierce hardcore woman, and then all of a sudden it was all about weird relationships, and she was like that was also all part of the time that the comic was situated in and when it was written. So, and now I think it's just probably also, as Justin already said, so necessary to do it, and also at the same time it's not even about it being so revolutionary. It's just portraying reality, and reality is diverse, and it shouldn't be something special that there are black characters in a book that do absolutely the same thing as white characters do, or LGBT people, LGBTQIA plus people in a book that are just in a book because of whatever, not because they are queer, but because they exist and they live a normal life like everybody else. And I think maybe that's just because that happens a bit more now. It seems so revolutionary, but it's actually more of the mirror that society, like, that's all our society. It's never been any different, but we just see it now more. And then people are also, why is it all so new? And I'm like, yeah, but we've always been like that. Women have always been strong and fierce, badass people, and not just at home behind the oven and in the kitchen and shit, and all the other stereotypes that are always portrayed so often in various other things or have been portrayed. It's just not the case, and it needs to be way more normal on how that is actually normal, what we see, what we deem as so revolutionary right now.
I totally agree. It shouldn't be this wildly special thing. It should just be the way things are and the way things always should be. One of my favorite film franchises, as stupid as these movies are, the Fast and Furious movies. I love those stupid movies, and I can't explain it. I'm not a gearhead. I'm not super into cars, you know. I just always love those movies. And one thing, like, looking back, that I love about, oh gosh, there's 8 of them now and a spinoff and a 9th one coming next year. And looking at the main cast of those films, oh, I just love that they do this. I feel like the Fast and the Furious films, looking at the main cast and even some of the villains, really represent what America looks like and what the world looks like. You look at the cast and the colors of each character, and everyone's different. You have 2 black males, which in a large group of characters in a non-black movie is kind of revolutionary, because you usually just have the one token black guy who usually will get replaced by another one. But instead you have 2 consistent black males. You know, you have, Vin Diesel, you know, you have a large emphasis on the Hispanic characters. You have Letty, you have Mia, you have Han, who's South Korean. You have, you know, it's just like such, oh, and Giselle, played by Gal Gadot, you know? They just did a phenomenal job of representation to me, and keeping badass women badass from day one. These characters weren't in their infancy in the first film, and then they grew up to be, you know, good race car drivers or criminals or whatever because they were taught by the men. No, they were better drivers in the first movie, you know? And
I've only seen like the first couple movies, and I was like, these women are great.
They're fantastic. And I think that's so important. You know, it's not like it got all macho when The Rock came in. The Rock was just a complimentary addition to all these other characters that are already badass. And The Rock being half black, half Samoan, again, just kind of just brings in even more culture to those film franchises. And I just think that sort of representation should be normalized. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just like to catch up on a few things that happened in chat, because there are so many good comments today. Tom Turtle says that while he thinks representation without tokenism is important, he's also wary of people stripping out the important bits. He's not just a human. His identities have shaped him, which I find, like, can totally see that. And the other Tom, so 3 Extra Lives Tom, said something I find interesting. Is if a new series starts or a video game and the main character or a side character is a person of color or LGBTQIA+, I see people with a narrative that this is pandering, like ticking a box, which is frustrating because I totally get on board with geek culture opening up more diversity, which I agree this shouldn't be a big deal. Did I read that all properly?
Yeah, I do see that. I see that a lot. If a diverse character is created and they're a main character, and like, you know, the token white audience is like, oh, you're just pandering to those people over there, and we don't actually need this. And it's like, well, the fact that you're saying that, yes, means we do need this, number one. Number two, like, what difference does it actually make?
Right.
Like, it, to you as a white person, say you're like cis, straight, white, as like, you know, not diverse as they come. what difference does it make to you to see somebody that you're like, okay, they're different from me. Whereas to somebody who is black, somebody who is gay, somebody who is like, doesn't identify as with a gender, is like, whatever, like they're different than this white, cis, straight, normal, boring, vanilla thing going on, which is nothing wrong with vanilla. You know what I mean? Like it makes such a difference to the person being represented, but it doesn't actually, like, it doesn't impact any, like, a straight white cis person's life, other than being like, oh, there's somebody else there. Oh, there's somebody that's not just exactly the same as me. That must be nice
for somebody. I mean, if you see that, like, personally, I experienced that revelation moment first when I saw Captain Marvel in the cinema. It was like, this is fucking epic. And then just recently, because of Chadwick Boseman's passing, and I watched a lot of videos where people just lost their shit when they saw the Black Panther poster for the first time, when it's like, this is how white people feel all the time. And just also very recently with the Spider-Man Miles Morales game that is coming out, and they are like portraying Salem and like Halem, some place in New York. Sorry, I'm not very knowledgeable with where that is in New York.
Harlem?
What? Harlem? Yeah. And he Harlem. Was just walking like through. Like you saw the guy watching the clip of the video material of the game material, and he was just walking past there and having all the cultural things there that is part of him. And he was so, there was nothing happening in the game, and you couldn't even totally see what was going on. Like, I had no idea that this was so important as a white person who can't like relate. And he was moved to tears just because they were passing through the street and seeing things that related to his culture, which he has never seen before. And I'm like, just because of that is why representation fucking matters always. And it's not just, we see us everywhere all the time. Why should other people not see themselves? Because it's not like we're like we're thinking we're so superior, but we're not, and that we're just as never mind.
No, I totally feel more what representation you're saying. Absolutely.
And I would also add that, like, by changing a character who has been created as a black character, as a queer character, as a insert other diverse character, to say like, oh, you're absolutely white, we'll just make them white and cis and straight again, that's just pandering to those people, like, you know. And that actually is pandering, like creating diverse characters, I think, is not pandering at all. It's just representing the people that exist in our world.
And to put it into perspective, the opposite, maybe it's an extreme opposite, but the opposite of representation is pretending an entire group of people simply do not exist. And that can't be okay in any regards. And one problem is, and that comment was really interesting, because I do believe pandering is a real thing. It goes along the lines of disingenuous representation. It's usually, you know, oh, we should present this character, this gay character, but instead of really doing your research about what this person is like or what this person should be like, you just base it off the stereotypes in your head and just shove them in there and say, he's expendable, he or she is expendable, he or she is replaceable. And it just looks bad, and it's a very poor representation. That is historically consistent, especially in Hollywood. No one likes pandering. It doesn't do good for anyone, the majority, the minority, the studio. It's just terrible. So representation is important, but accurate representation is also very important.
One example of a really shit representation and a pretty shit move in general from Marvel was when they had that, what was it, in Endgame? Endgame was the last one, right? So it was Infinity War and Endgame. And I think in Endgame, you had the, where they were having this, where Captain America had this therapy session group session with people, and one of them was talking about how his husband was snapped away and was a man, and then it turned out that it was the one of the directors or producers or something from the movie who portrayed the gay person, and I'm like, and who isn't even gay in the first place. I'm like, that was really fucking weird, right? That is pandering, because we have one gay moment in the movie, and that is not even portrayed by a gay person or anything. You just thought it was, you had to do it yourself because nobody else could have done it better than you.
Right.
Big question. So
I thought that was weird too. Because I recognized him, you know, like maybe a lot of people didn't know who the Russo brothers are, what they look like, but they also cameoed in the Winter Soldier. So it's like when I saw him playing this character, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I mean, and I guess that's kind of the beauty of acting, is that you can be a gay person in real life and portray a straight person, or vice versa, or whatever. But, you know, do it well and do it carefully, you know, because you don't just want to not offend someone. You're representing an entire people, even if you don't think so. Maybe you just think you're channeling just one person. But the thing with minorities is, and I just saw this in a comedy skit recently, it's really entertaining, but it's like this idea that, like, if you met one gay person your entire life, one person who was part of the LGBT community, just one, and they did something weird, you're not going to go home and, you know, to your spouse and say, hey, honey, I saw this one person do this really weird thing. You're going to say, no, gay people do this really weird thing. The entire community does this really weird thing, you know? And it's like, it's a dangerous mindset, but that's how we act with minorities, with women and with children even, you know, all kids do this thing, or all Black people do this one thing. And so, yeah, accurate representation is just as important as representation conceptually, because you can't do it wrong. And that is toxic. Sure. Yeah.
Tom said in chats again, asked about whether we talked about the Oscars checklist. And I just asked because I had no idea what he was talking about. And he said, they have diversity requirements for movies that can be nominated. And he talked about it with his best friend during brunch. And he was like, you can't constrain art. And he mentioned that it was a really low bar. And I also keep wondering how, and I personally wonder what requirements there are, because wasn't there just very recently, or at least 2 or 3 years ago, this all white Oscar situation where they didn't even have anyone nominated that was Black or anything at all. So I'm like, what diversity bar is there that then last year, the year before, I think.
Yeah. I think it was the year before. And I don't have too many thoughts on that, except I'm not surprised to be honest. Yeah. Like, it's not good. It's unacceptable. But I saw that coming a mile away, you know?
Yeah, that is true.
And I stopped caring about award shows a long time ago anyway. It's like that to me, that's not a metric of success. It's not a metric of quality. My favorite movies haven't won any awards or anything like that. So to me, there is a very important validation, because those award shows are not just an American thing. They're globally recognized. That's kind of important. I mean, actors don't just act for the money, they act for the recognition, they act for the legacy, they act because it's what they're passionate about. And those award shows aren't just about handing out trophies to whatever. It really is about acknowledging what one person does to another. It's about the acknowledgement that your influence is not just about your money, it's about your passion, it's about how good you actually are. You know, when I forgot what award it was, but before he passed, Chadwick Boseman, you know, dedicated one of his awards to Denzel Washington, who I think at the time had no idea that he had such an impact on Chadwick Boseman. And so it's like little things like that, the big things like that, where it's like it is important to have representation at award shows like that, because you can walk away from an award show with this mentality that only white people make good stuff. That's it. Or only straight people make good stuff.
Yeah.
That if you're transgender, it's low quality. If you're whatever, you know, if you're Hispanic, if you're not first generation American, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's you know, So that sucked. That situation was sucky, but
I think that's mainly the reason why, yes, while we don't really care, like also I mean I look at the results and then I move on with my day, right? Just because I'm curious and I look at them, but don't really give them too much attention of mine in general. But the ones who win is also kind of that's the winners that it influences where the money goes, because the people that, which is why I assume, like what I assume, because when you win something like this, then people will want you in your movies, and movies that you're in, they will be probably higher financed, I assume. and that all becomes like when you're a director, then people will probably pay you more if you won the Oscar, for example, or if you won any proper awards. So we would need, and I do think that is probably really hard to get financed in all that. So that's why I'm like, yeah, we need more representation everywhere in general as well, also in the winners of the Oscars, even if we don't give a shit, because otherwise we will just perpetuate the constantly cis white straight and just put more money in the same box that's already so full of money or anyway, instead of giving it to people who would do really great stuff with it. And Tom mentioned about Zendaya winning the Emmys for Euphoria, and everybody's so, oh my god, how could she? Because she's amazing.
Yeah,
She's like the youngest woman ever to win a lead actress in the Emmys. I think that's from what I've seen. That was the main outcry, and I've only seen positives. Like Zendaya is amazing,
and she was against like Olivia Colman, against Jennifer Aniston,
right.
A few other bigger ones. And then that's also, I think, what people were like, whoa.
Yeah. She deserved it, though. It wasn't really a snub. It wasn't pandering. Like, she
filled that
role. Perfect. I haven't seen Euphoria, but I've seen a lot of other things that she's in, and like talent exudes out of her.
Yeah. Yeah. 24, man. What the fuck? My life at 24 was way different. I mean, it is now as well, but there we go.
Exactly. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. Zendaya is fantastic.
But yeah, I already heard Euphoria is just really crazy. Oh, yeah. Sandra Oh, I forgot about her. How could I?
Oh, yeah.
She's Christina. I like her. From her.
Yeah. Yeah. I like her a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, it is a wonderful thing too to see, like, to see someone so young do something like that. She's mixed, I believe, half white, half black. And I look at my daughter, who is half white, and I see that just because of that, she's in a particular position in this world, a position of greatness and of potential oppression already. Mm-hmm. And things like, you know, Breonna Taylor's killing, things like that scare me, because I don't want, I mean, who would want that for their kid? You know, no one. I just, it blows my mind to think that I have to raise her in a world where people who look like her in 2020 are being treated like her ancestors were, or her great grandparents were. You know, in the 50s and 40s and 30s in America. And it's, as a dad, it scares me. And so when controversial films or films that address certain things, even imperfect ones, like the 2016 Ghostbusters movie, which there's multiple dissertations in my mind about that film, because like, The 1984 original is, in my opinion, literally the greatest film ever made of all time in any genre. No one can tell me anything else. It's the only movie that matters. And so the 2016 Ghostbusters was like, in my mind, I was like, you know, that was good, but that's it, man. Like, you know, and so, but my daughter sees it and she's like, oh yeah, there are lady Ghostbusters too. That's freaking awesome. It makes a super simple point, right? Because After 1984 and before 2016, if you read the comic books, if you watch the cartoons, there have been multiple female Ghostbusters. Like, that's not a new concept, right? There are not just male Ghostbusters. But the film really brought it to light, and it brought it to light with a great director, with an insane studio. I mean, Sony's crazy, you know, and marvelous actresses that...
And Chris Hemsworth. Sorry, had to add that in there.
Yes. But absolutely. And all four of them are more concerned about a great product, about delivering great jokes, about leaving a legacy behind instead of looking good for a straight male audience, right?
Mm-hmm. That is true.
You know, I think that's absolutely magnificent. And so I think that my whole point was just that seeing things like that, seeing that Disney Plus is working on a Miss Marvel TV show starring Kamala Khan, who I believe is the first like Muslim American, you know, teenage superheroine. Like, that's just super cool. They're working on Young Avengers stuff, you know, America, Miss America, what's her name? America Chavez, I think, who's like Latina and bisexual. And I just think that's phenomenal. Like, I cannot wait to see that, you know, live action. It's like, that's the stuff my daughter's going to get to see, you know? She can watch Captain Marvel with me and not only be inspired by Carol Danvers, but also by Monica Rambeau, who grows up to be the next Captain Marvel. It's just like, there's just so much exciting things for her.
I love her.
Yeah. Just makes me so happy. And so that kind of reminds me, it's like, of the importance of this stuff, like being a geek, being a nerd, having that influence. It's like, life isn't all about Black Lives Matter. It's not all about fighting police brutality. Sometimes it's about kicking back and fighting for what's right in your own way. And I think Stan Lee and his legacy did a great job of doing that. I think Jack Kirby did a great job of doing that. I think, you know, I think even Zack Snyder, I didn't like the Justice League film, but looking at the characters who are playing these traditionally white, straight characters, and maybe they are all straight, I don't know, but for the characters that were portrayed in there, who would have thought that someone like Gal Gadot would be portraying Wonder Woman, you know, or someone like Jason Momoa, and she was great in it.
Don't get her started. Don't say his name.
We're going on a 20-minute tangent on how amazing Jason Momoa is.
Oh, yeah. No, I would, yeah, if I mean, I'm a straight man. If he asked me to marry him, I'd be like, you know what? Let me ask my wife. I'll get back to you. You know, he's absolutely fantastic.
I can't imagine your wife disagreeing on that. She would be like, let's do a throuple.
Yeah, she'd probably invite him to dinner first. Like, let me get to know him.
Get to know him.
We wouldn't be able to blame each other. It's fine.
It's Jason Momoa. There's nothing to blame. Even my boyfriend, when we went to watch Aquaman and he had his first show up, he was punching me on the side and was like, there he comes. And I'm like, I know.
I know. Don't have to tell me.
Oh, I know.
I know.
He's so great. But yeah, you know, Hollywood studios are getting it. They're really getting it. And it's a beautiful thing. It really is.
I just got caught up
in Momoa now. What have you done?
might do, but it's fine. I'm totally focused here.
I'll warn you next time I'm about to bring him up.
I know. This is a regular, like, especially in the last 2 months, this is quite a regular thing that we've just
had. Oh, I did the last 3 months. It's all I have during Corona now. Don't blame me for this.
I understand fully.
When you said cabin fever before, I was like, yeah, we all have that now, don't we? Like, everything is just fucking cabin fever all the time.
Yeah. It's a drag.
It is. Yeah. It is. I know that this has been a really lighthearted end to a really powerful conversation, but I just want to thank you, Justin, for your insights into, you know, race and nerdity and pop culture and like why representation matters, not just to women, because Monica and I talk about it all the time. Like, it's so great to see women, but it's also nice to hear other perspectives and everything on it from someone well, so well-spoken in these issues because you have your podcast and you talk about this, and I just love it. So thank you for being here with us.
Of course. Well, thank you for having me.
That's so, like, that made me think as well. And the chat is also very, very appreciative and excited about the discussion that we have. So I just want to relay that as well.
Yeah, well, thank you, everyone, and the chat. That's exciting. Thank you for engaging and for listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Tell us where we can find you online and where we can hear your podcast.
So my podcast is on, it's called Super Tangent. And that's one word, Super Tangent. And I can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. So basically the big one. Stitcher's not that big, but it's there. I like it. And all of my content, all episodes, inquiries about my audio engineering business, and the blog can all be found on my website, which is supertangentpod.com. I am no longer on Twitter. I am on Instagram, Super Tangent Podcast, and I am on Facebook, Super Tangent Podcast. So come find me, bother me, ask me questions and stuff.
Yeah. Perfect.
And Justin has very recently joined the Dragon Powered Studio Discord channel. But I haven't seen him since the day he joined.
I haven't been on very much. I need to engage more.
So a lot of the people in chat are in the DPS Discord as well, so you can hook up with Justin there too.
Yes, indeedy.
We put all of that in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And see you again for another amazing episode of Geek Caring next week.
Thanks. Bye.
If you like this episode of Geek Caring, why not leave us an iTunes review? You can also find us on social at Geek Caring and over on geekcaring.com.
This show is brought to you by Dragon Powered Studio. Find more at DragonPoweredStudio.com.